upset. Money, money, money. Turn it up. See the money ain't a thing. Money. Into cash. Money for nothing and it's just free.
I wanna be a billionaire.
No upset.
It's time for Idaho's Money Show on 580 KIDO and 580KIDO.com. Listen, learn, interact with Brian Wiley and Steve Rausch, as well as other local expert guests.
Brian Wiley is a financial advisor with Tree City Advisors. Tree City Advisors is an Idaho registered investment advisory firm. Brian does not hold himself out as providing any specific financial, legal, or other advice on this program. Information presented may not be suitable for you. Consult a registered investment advisor when evaluating any particular investment security or investment strategy.
Call the show now at 580-KIDO. That's 580-5436. Idaho's Money Show starts now.
And it does start now. It's Idaho's Money Show, 580 KIDO, Idaho's Talk Station. We've got Steve Rausch here tonight. I'm covering for Brian Wiley, and I've got Mr. Steve Marsh. So you got the two Steves tonight of the three Steves that are on the show. Steve, how are you doing?
Good, good.
So, yeah, we're here tonight. Brian is taking the night off. He, I think he's not feeling too well. So he's got a little bit of a, I think some allergies. In a cold that he's been kind of battling a little bit. Plus, he's been working hard. So, you know.
I'll bet you he's got cabin fever and he's out on a bike ride right now as we speak.
That could be, too. He could be, too. Even in the rain, he would be out there. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, it's Idaho's Money Show. We're at the Team Super of Napa Studio Hotline. That's 580-5436 or 580-KIDO. We're going to open up the phone lines. You can call in and ask any question you want about... So I'm an attorney. I practice primarily in the areas of estate planning and wills, trusts, and then I also practice in business planning. So you can call, but really you could call and ask any legal question. I can at least give you my 2 cents about it. Mm-hmm. And I have Steve Marsh with me from Medical Plans of Idaho. Steve is an all things insurance guy, at least on the side of health insurance, life insurance,
health, life, disability, vision, dental,
all those
accident.
Types of all those types of insurance that we all need.
Right.
And so tonight would be a great night to call, ask your questions about the insurance stuff. One of the things we're going to talk about tonight, here in this first segment anyway, is there's a bunch of forms that people should have been receiving for their taxes this spring.
Right.
Walk us through what those forms are, Steve.
Yeah. So back in January, everybody, if you were on the exchange, which is Your Health Idaho, on about the 20th of the month, they mailed out 1095As. And those are for all people who are under the healthcare exchange. You also have a 1095A if you didn't qualify for a tax credit, but you bought your insurance direct from the insurance company. So the insurance companies mailed those out there by the end of January. And so a lot of people got those forms, and quite honestly, they get this stuff and they just chuck it to the side or it goes in the garbage, and they don't really think about it until they go see their CPA. And, of course, then they want to call me.
That's right. You're going. Thank you.
Right, right. So those forms are available. If you work for a large employer, you got what's called a 1095C, and that comes directly from your employer. They had to get those out, I believe, by the 15th of February. So you should have those things in hand. If you don't, you need to start looking for them before you do your taxes. Because when you go see your CPA, you're going to need those forms. If you're on the exchange and you need it, all you have to do is log into your account, go into the inbox for messages, and it's right there. Every time. I've probably pulled 100 of them probably in the last 3 weeks, and every single one of them is right there where they're
It's not like it was a couple years ago where there were, 600,000 people that didn't get them.
Yep. No, this year, Your Health Idaho made a very strong commitment to get those things out and get them in people's hands and get them out there early.
Well, you need to, because I know that not only do the CPAs need them, but if you're going to do any of your own tax-related work using TurboTax or any of the other programs, those programs actually, if you don't have those forms, it won't let you proceed any further. So you can't even complete your taxes without having that form in place.
Right, right. And with that form, what happens is your tax preparer is going to take that. They're going to put that information. So what they do is they extract the information for the tax credit, and there's a couple of other pieces that come off of there, some codes. And that creates a form 8962. Now, this last year, we ran into a lot of problems this spring with people who filed their taxes last year, but apparently didn't get this 60 or 8962 filed with the IRS. So then at the first of the year, they got their tax credit, but then their tax credit was pulled away. And so this might explain it for a lot of you that lost your tax credit and then had to reapply for it, is you had what's called a taxpayer discrepancy. When Department of Health and Welfare looked into the IRS portal, it's showing that you hadn't completed your taxes for 2015. And so as a result, they take your tax credit away. It was such a problem this year that they actually stopped doing it here about probably the end of February and said, okay, for those who this occurred with, go ahead and reapply. We'll get you in and we'll deal with this sometime later in the year. We'll see if we can validate your information.
Oh.
Yeah. So 8962, that's a form, IRS 8962, when you're doing your taxes, whether you do it personally through TurboTax or
wherever,
Intuit, or you go to your tax preparer, make sure that form is there. It has to be there. And if you file and you're not sure, you need to get a copy of your tax return and make sure that it's there.
Make sure.
Otherwise, you're going to have a problem next year.
Yeah, make sure it gets submitted. Yeah. And we just don't know. You know, I know that Congress is at least trying to figure out this whole Affordable Care Act thing and whether or not they're going to replace and repeal. And until then, you have a duty to file these.
You
so
do.
You just got to make sure and do it, because there's penalties and stuff if you don't. So
right.
We're going to go right to the phone lines. We got Lucas on the line out of Star. Lucas is calling about taxes. Hey, Lucas, how can we help you?
How you guys doing?
Good.
How are you?
Good. So hopefully I don't cut. I don't know why I don't have service. But I have a question. So I filed with TurboTax for like 5 years straight. Same password I've had, same information, everything. So I go to file this year, and it immediately gets rejected. Nothing's changed in my life, and it says that the adjusted income number doesn't match what the IRS has for me. But I have my tax return from 2015, and I have what TurboTax says is the same thing, but then it's saying the IRS doesn't recognize it.
That's interesting. So there's a couple different things that it could be, just coming off the top of my head, and we don't have Dallas Millington here with us tonight that could give us an idea of maybe what's going on. But first thing is I have heard recently in the last couple years of situations similar to this, where you go to file your taxes and the IRS doesn't recognize the numbers you've entered, and come to find out somebody has gotten your information and actually filed a tax return under your identity, basically, and it is now messing up the system because the IRS doesn't recognize the numbers you're putting in.
Gotcha.
And so I know what has been happening with that is people have been actually contacting the IRS directly, and, you know, walking through the process of finding out what's going on. But there, we do actually have a resource here locally, Lucas, that you could actually maybe get a quicker answer. At the federal courthouse here in Boise, up off of Fort Street, there's an IRS office in there, and you can actually go in there, and they have customer service people that are right there, and can usually look up your information right there and get you an answer of what's going on. So that might be an option for you versus sitting on the phone for 45 minutes to an hour waiting for an agent to get on with you.
Yeah,
and then it said just what it said to do. Click a link and it says request your tax transcript from 2015 from the IRS, which takes 10 days. I did that, right?
Right.
Because online it didn't even recognize it. You know, you can get one online, the transcript.
Right.
But when I even put in my credit card number to verify who I was, it said it didn't recognize me.
Yeah,
which is the oddest thing. So
that is odd. Yeah. And so I would say that see if the transcript comes. If it doesn't come, then I would say make a trip down there to the federal courthouse and just walk right in there and see if they can't help you.
Okay. Yep. Thanks, guys. That's very helpful.
You're welcome. You're welcome, Lucas. Thanks for the phone call. You know, these are the type of things that I think happen more often than not, that we see situations where due to a glitch in the system, or I know you're going to notice, because I just went through this yesterday with my son as he was preparing his taxes, that they're requiring more and more information as you fill out those TurboTax or H&R Block or whoever it is, so that they can fight identity theft. And so not only are they having you enter in, you know, all your normal information, name, birth date, social security number, all that kind of stuff, but they're having you enter in your driver's license number, your email address, your phone number. Plus, what they're doing, just like Lucas was saying, was for you to be able to verify, so they will file and accept your taxes, you have to be able to enter your adjusted gross income from the year before. And it has to match. Gotcha. And so this is what Lucas is running into, is something got haywire there from the standpoint of what he entered, either what he entered last year and what he's entering this year, or something's going haywire for him. Right. So
yeah, I was kind of surprised because I went and got my taxes done. This is the first time in years that, and thank you, Chris, I know you're listening, that we actually got it done prior to the deadline. And, you know, so no extensions being filed. But, you know, they came back and she said, oops, so we got to get your driver's license and driver's license number, the issue date, and the expiration date. And so obviously they're going to use that to help validate and make sure that, you know, people who are filing are who they say they are.
Right, absolutely. Yep. Mm-hmm. And I just got a message from Dallas. He just texted me. He listens to the show most often. And so he just texted me and he said that it's possible, Lucas, if you're listening, to just double check everything that, you know, you put in there. It's possible that when everything got put in, you got the wrong social security number or something like that. Or if it was, you know, it sounds like you were your own preparer. So I would guess that you'd entered everything in right. But, you know, just check all that again and see if we can't track it down. But otherwise, I would say go to the IRS office and see if they can't help you out. So,
Yeah, and it's really easy, you know, to put, you know, be typing in a 4 and you get a 5 or a 3. And
transpose the numbers.
Transpose it. And, you know, you might even, Lucas, you might even have somebody that you trust. Just look over your shoulder. Just look at those numbers. Just make sure they're all exactly the way they're supposed to be and see if it'll go through again.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And so it's one of those things we just, you know, whether you have a preparer do it for you, that's why there are CPAs and other tax preparers that are out there so that they can double check, triple check, make sure everything's right. But if you're doing it on your own, you just got to double, triple check all those things so we can get it right. So we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk more about the things that we've got going on up in Congress. They're talking about doing something with the Affordable Care Act. So far, it sounds like it's falling off the cliff right now.
Right.
We'll see and talk about maybe what they have in line or if we've heard anything.
Okay.
Idaho's Money Show. We'll be right back.
And back weekdays, 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KITO.
And we're back. It's Idaho's Money Show, 580 KITO, Idaho's Talk Station. We're at the Team Subaru of Nampa Studio Hotline. That's 580-5436 or 580 KITO. Got Steve Marsh here with me tonight. This is Steve Roush covering in for Mr. Brian Wiley. He's taking a little break this evening. So that was a great call. We appreciated the call that Lucas called in and asked those questions. Those IRS questions are interesting ones. You know, you just never know what's going to happen when you're filing your taxes. So, but let's jump back into the whole insurance conversation. So, you know, you got these forms, you receive these forms, they need to go on your tax return. It's going to tell them what tax credits you got, all those types of things. Yep. And that automatically adjusts depending on whether your income increased or not or went down and, you know, whether or not you have to pay a penalty in for, you know, for not having or receiving too much of a credit or whatever it may be. And that's what those forms are for.
Correct. Yeah. Basically, it's a reconciliation document.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So look for those until Congress makes some change. We're going to have those every year.
Mm-hmm.
Those are something that are part of your taxes now. It's just like the 1099s you receive or your W-2s. It's all part of the paperwork that you receive to make sure that you're filing your taxes appropriately.
Yeah.
So on the there's been a lot of discussion. I followed it a little bit anyway, what's been going on in Congress. And obviously, several weeks ago, they had tried to push through at least a change to the Affordable Care Act of some kind and weren't able to get the votes to do it, so they pulled it. And now they've been discussing back and forth some changes, some things that they, you know, replace, repeal, whatever it may be. Are you hearing anything in the industry at all about anything they anticipate we're going to see, or if anything this year?
Yeah, I know the insurance companies are basically, at this point, they're kind of looking at it as it could go right, it could go left.
It just doesn't, it, yeah.
We just don't know. And we know that, you know, President Trump is going to push and continue to push to, you know, to repeal this program. And so in May, so the ACA is still on the books. It hasn't gone anywhere, right. Even though everybody thinks that, you know, when he signed an executive order that abolished it, it didn't. It didn't do anything to the
That's
program.
Right. Because he doesn't have authority to do that. That right. has to be Congress.
Right. So coming up in May, the insurance companies still have to function as though this law is in effect. So by the end of May, they have to file their rates and their plans for next year. So I've talked with a couple of carriers, and basically what they've told me is, at this point, there's going to be very little change as far as they're concerned in terms of the plans. Now, there's some parts of the plans, like the out-of-pocket and the deductibles. Those index every year, you know, from the lowest deductible
right.
to the, you know, the highest out-of-pocket, which right. right now is $7,150. So that'll adjust a little bit. So they're moving forward as though this thing still exists. They have no other option to do that. So they're going to get everything filed. They're going to get everything put together, get it into the Department of Insurance, which then will go to the Department of Health and Human Services for final approvals. And they're also in the process of considering, all right, well, what happens if this goes away? And so I do know that there is discussion at the Department of Insurance about bringing back some pre-ACA type programs.
Interesting.
Yeah, and which would be good. Pre-existing is one of the biggest issues that's sitting
out there.
Yeah,
the pre-existing condition issue. Right,
right. right. And how you, that really is a big function when it comes to the rating. And what I've heard not only on the national side but also here kind of in the local area, the numbers are still correlating. But they can cut the premiums by about 50% if we can just go back and put a one-year pre-existing on you know, somebody who's jumping in just because they, you know, they found out they need knee surgery. So they're going to jump in and buy insurance today through the ACA. And then come February 1, they cancel. And
so in essence, what that means is that if they went back with at least some of the plans and added back if you buy a plan like that, that you, if you have a pre-existing condition, you have a year wait before you can get treated for that pre-existing
condition.
Gotcha.
Right. Which is, in my opinion, that's fair. Okay. Because you weren't in the system in the first place. So you're not paying into the pool when it's your turn to have something happen. You know, if we have homes, we all have fire insurance, but we don't use our fire insurance every year.
Right.
Nor do we ever want to.
Nor, I hope not.
And we buy auto insurance, you know, and yet we hope not to have a claim. You know, but for some reason, when it comes to health insurance, people think that, well, if I buy health insurance, I should be able to use it.
Right.
Well, that's true, and there's a lot of things that you can use it for. But for the big things, we can't. You can't put in $200 and take $20,000 out. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, the economics of it.
Yeah, the economics of it just don't work. So we have to have the pooling of everybody in order to make that function.
I think it's a combination of the pre-existing condition issue as well as the lifetime cap issues, right?
Lifetime caps.
You know, that have contributed to an increase in the premiums, plus the fact that we're trying to ensure, because we have a lot more people who were not healthy that now qualify for policies, these insurance companies are having to now insuring all these people, and these people are now weighing down the system, and that's where a lot of the money's going.
Right. In the first couple of years, there was some mechanisms built in. There were some risk corridors that were built in. Unfortunately, the government didn't pay the funding back out, which a lot of the companies have sued. They're trying to get some of that money back, and they're going to get a little bit of it, but it's certainly not going to overcome the initial shock and loss that these carriers took. I mean, we're talking, you know, each of the carriers here in Idaho could probably stand up and say they lost at least $100 million.
Right, right.
You know, if not a lot more than that. And so as a result, you know, you've got, you know, a lot of claims that came in these first few years, which, you know, they were waiting for additional funding to come in, and they never got that funding. And that hurt a lot of companies nationwide. In fact, I've got a friend who's actually in Iowa. The last carrier in Iowa just released an announcement last week saying they were pulling out. They will no longer participate. And that was a Blue Cross Blue Shield product.
Interesting.
In Iowa, yeah.
So they just couldn't sustain that.
They couldn't sustain it, you know. Here we at least have carriers that are, you know, they're making it work,
right.
You know.
And maybe they're more fiscally responsible than some of these other ones are, too, you know.
It could be. It could very well be. You know, here in Idaho, we've had, you know, while as a consumer we may feel like, gosh, you know, I feel like my premiums are really high. Go price out insurance in New York. You think rates are high here?
Yeah.
And so, you know, part of the argument that Trump has, which I don't think will ever work, and we could probably bring an actuary in here, and he could probably tell us actuarially why we don't do some of the things that we do. But in Idaho, there's like 130 insurance companies that actually have authority to do business here. They choose not to. And these are big national carriers. They just
right.
choose not to. We're a small population state like Montana and Wyoming. Why would you come here and mess around with a population of, say, a million, million and a half, when you can get that just in Portland?
Right.
You know? And so, you know, to say that, well, we'll open up borders and you can buy across state lines, that'll work great the first year. Year two, it's going to implode on you.
Right.
And the reason for that is people, if you live in New York, you're going to find out that, gosh, Idaho has these great rates. So you're going to buy your insurance in Idaho, assuming we could do this. You're going to buy it here in Idaho for a fraction of the cost, have all your claims back there in New York. The reason the premiums are higher there is because the cost of care is higher.
Right.
So we're going to pay a bunch of claims out over there based on, you
right.
know, numbers that we weren't factoring in. And as a result, next year, our rates are going to skyrocket out
as
of
well,
control
right.
as well. It'll
yeah.
just, it'll come full
those
circle.
Those are things that certainly aren't being taken into consideration when
it's
when,
not.
When people are talking about, though. There's a reason why we have the borders and the mm-hmm. way it's designed for
right.
for a purpose. And it goes towards the fact that you have a population. I mean, you look at Idaho. Idaho, from a salary standpoint,
mm-hmm.
Idaho most often lags behind the rest of the country as
we
for
do.
Salaries.
Right.
It just makes sense that you've got to keep that hemmed in and bordered to Idaho to keep the rates lower, because otherwise we wouldn't be able to afford them.
Right, right.
And I think that's one thing that most people aren't thinking about. So
right. And another piece of that is, you know, Blue Cross and Blue Shield, they're basically, when I talk about them, I kind of talk about them like they're a franchise in a
right,
way.
Right, right.
Blue Cross of Idaho cannot sell in Montana. Montana Blue Cross cannot sell here.
Right.
And so they have their territories, and it's based on, you know, the geographic area that they operate within. They cannot go out and sell to somebody
in another jurisdiction.
Yeah.
So
right.
we're going to take a break. When we come back, questions about disability,
mm-hmm.
disability insurance,
sure.
what we should do with that, how do you get it?
Mm-hmm.
Those are all things that we'll talk about when we come back.
Sounds good.
It's Idaho's Money Show. We'll be right back. And we're back. It's Idaho's Money Show, 580K Audio, Idaho's Talk Station. We're at the Team Subaru of Napa Studio Hotline. That's 580-5436 or 580K Audio. It's a great night to call if you've got questions concerning anything. Health insurance, life insurance, annuities, although you don't do many annuities.
I don't do annuities, no.
Disability.
Brian keeps pestering me to do it, though.
Brian does?
Once in a while,
once
yeah.
in a while.
Yeah,
it just depends. You know, and he's not a big fan of annuities. Neither am I,
no.
actually. I've seen too many situations where annuities have hurt people versus
yeah.
actually helping people. But
right.
they work in a very specific situation.
Right.
So it comes up every once in a
yeah.
while. But life insurance, disability
mm-hmm.
insurance.
Disability.
So
right.
on occasion, I'll get questions, clients coming in, we're doing estate planning, we're talking through, because one of the things that I do as I'm going through, trying to get better at it anyway, is a kind of an analysis of everything that they've got, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at, okay, what do you have in life insurance? What do you have in health insurance? What do you have, you know, car insurance, all those types of things. And then, you know, invariably the question comes up, well, what do you have? Do you have any disability insurance? And most of the time people are like, oh no, I didn't. Well, I might have something through my work, but I don't have anything else. Right.
Right.
And so, and then I'll get the question. And this was the question that came up recently, was a small business owner, one income home, mom's a stay at home mom. Do we need to have disability insurance?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it kind of depends on what your employment is and whether you have a chance of, you know, getting injured or, you know, those types of things. But I said, I think it's always a good idea to at least look at it, especially at your age, and they're in their mid-30s, mm-hmm. that, you know, because you never know whether illness or accident or something like that would pop up, and then all of a sudden you don't have any income. So talk a little bit about disability insurance. What do we look at? What does these companies look at when we're trying to get somebody qualified, those mm-hmm. type of things?
Sure. So disability is really insuring your ability to earn a living and your income. And so there's a couple different types of disability. There's short-term disability and there's long-term disability. Usually we see short-term disability offered through an employer. Somebody comes in from, say, an Aflac or Colonial. Right. Sometimes it's, a more mainstream carrier putting a long-term and short-term disability in place. But a short-term disability is going to be a small group policy or, you know, a group policy that's going to have a short duration. So it'll have, you know, a benefit that starts either 7, 15, or 30 days after you become disabled.
Right.
And it'll pay for up to 13 or sometimes as long as 26 weeks. After that, it just quits paying. And then at that point, that's where a long-term disability would step in. And long-term disability, we see that a lot of times where, it's going to kick in at, say, 30, 60, 180, 90 days out. The longer you go for the elimination period, the lower the premium.
Gotcha.
So it's a lot like life insurance. It's a lot like as far as the underwriting standpoint is. But it's a lot like a long-term care policy where there's moving pieces. There's, you know, a benefit period. How long do you want it to cover you for?
Right.
And most of those are going to be anywhere from 1 to 3, 5 years, or to age 65. The longer the period, the more the policy costs.
That's right.
Sure. Age is a factor. The occupation that you are. So if you're a doctor, your rate is going to, you're going to have an occupational class. And so let's say that's a 3, where a welder might be a 9. So welding is going to have a higher risk of, sure. of an injury, so they're going to charge a higher rate. Kind of like work comp rates.
Gotcha.
You know, it's probably the best way I can put it. There's a code and a class for every occupation that you can do. So if you're a secretary sitting at a desk, very low chance that you're going to get hurt. The rates are much lower.
Right. Yep. And so when we talk about elimination periods, mm-hmm. An elimination period is a period of time once there's been a determination that you are disabled.
Correct.
Before you actually can receive the benefit.
Right. 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 Yep. And it can, some people look at it as that's my deductible.
Right.
You
right.
know, so it's a 90-day deductible. I'm going to foot the bill for everything up to that point, and then they're going to start reimbursing.
And they're going to kick in and start paying for it.
Right. Right.
Is it similar to a long-term care policy in terms of it being like a pool of money that's available there? Because that's kind of what a long-term care policy
right.
is. It's kind of like a pool of money that's available to provide for long-term care. Is a disability policy similar to that, or is it just...
No, it's a little different. It's structured differently. So what they do with a disability policy is most of the time you're going to get somewhere between 50 and 65% of your gross wages.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So if you're making $5,000 a month, you're going to be eligible for maybe somewhere around $3,500 to $3,800 a month in disability. Now, it doesn't mean you have to buy that much.
Right.
But, you know, to replace your income, that's what you're going to get.
Gotcha.
And so, and kind of the idea behind that is kind of twofold. One is most of the time, if it's a private policy that you've gone out and purchased, it's non-taxable, the proceeds.
Right.
However, if an employer pays for it, those proceeds are taxable.
Taxable.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So you always want to try and do it the other way. And so what happens is there's kind of two thoughts to that. One is that you're going to get about 60% of your take home or, you know, your previous gross wages.
Right.
So the balance of that, you would have paid that out in taxes. And secondly, you know, if we paid you 100% of your wages, you'd probably never get well.
Right. So. Right. No. So this has been years ago. I had somebody I was working with, and he was actually a doctor, and he had a policy that was, I want to say it paid like $10,000 or $12,000 a month. I mean, it was a big policy, and he had been paying for it for quite some time, and then he indeed became disabled.
Okay.
He was a surgeon, and he ended up with some kind of a carpal tunnel related type mm-hmm. thing, and he couldn't do surgeries anymore because of it.
Right.
And that long-term disability plan kicked in and was paying him, it was like $10,000 or $20,000 a month. I was like,
right.
You know, but he's a physician. Mm-hmm. So he was making, you know.
Right.
And
right.
So do disability policies, they're generally based upon your employment, what kind of earning capacity you had, right?
Correct.
And that's what they're basing what they were, you know, at least what the percentages they're going to pay you, right?
Right. And within that, there's some definitions of disability. You know, what's full, you know, are you fully disabled? Are you partially disabled? There's some riders that you can get, you know, like, you know, if for partial disability, you know, you could earn up to 20% of it. There's also, like, for instance, with, I've just lost my thought.
And it went right out of his mind.
It went out of my mind.
That's what happens when, so there's disability policies for insurance guys. And
there
that's
is,
what
there is.
Is.
Yeah, I know where I was going with this. So there's, under the definition, there's own occupation and any occupation. And really, really important. So most of the policies that I'm going to quote when I'm working with somebody, it's going to be their occupation. So as a surgeon, like you said,
right.
If something happens and he can no longer do surgery because he had a hand injury, he is going to get that benefit from that point forward for the duration of the policy.
Right.
If it's defined as any occupation, well, chances are you could be a Walmart greeter, you could flip burgers,
you could go do something. Right.
You could become a secretary. There's a lot of things that you can go do, and because of that, it's not going to pay.
Right.
So you got to be careful, and you got to understand what you're buying.
It's with any contract, particularly the insurance world, mm-hmm. you need to pay attention.
The details.
That's right. It's in the details. And mm-hmm. That's what I try and talk to clients about all the time is about contracts. It's in the details. Because I'll have clients that will come in and they'll say, oh, will you do this, put together a contract for me, and I'll send them, you know, an 18-page contract. And they're like, well, can't you make it smaller? I'm like, yeah, I can make it smaller, but the devil's in the details.
It is.
You know? And that's what makes contracts longer. And you know, yeah, you have to read through it more. And I know it may be an inconvenience, but it's also what's protecting you, right?
Right, exactly.
And it's the same thing when you're looking at these policies is make sure you understand what it covers versus what it doesn't cover.
Right, right. And sometimes there's great companies out there that will help lower the premium a little bit. So, again, you got to look at the details. But it'll be an own occupation, but maybe it's for the first 2 to 5 years. After that period of time of 2 to 5 years, it converts to any occupation. So, you know, if you do have that disability, but yet you could go out and do work after that window of time, you're going to have to go get a job because they're going to stop paying. But again, that lowers the premiums and makes it a little bit more affordable as well.
Right.
So,
right.
And then if you're self-employed is going to go off of your net earnings. So not your gross. So that's something to keep in mind. They're going to pay based on that net earning.
Yeah. So
because that's really what you're claiming with the IRS that you earned.
Right. Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the fact of the matter. So,
right.
I think that, you know, disability policies, are there types of professions that you see more disability policies written for? Is it tend to be more those higher risk, like construction?
No, when I have somebody asking for it, it's usually that person who's self-employed. They're worried about if something happens to them, or it's your dentist, your white collar.
Your professionals.
Yeah, you're more your professionals. You know, you see a lot of like the Aflac and Colonial products, across the board. And those are pretty inexpensive policies. But again, you got to know exactly what is it covering. Because usually those are targeted more toward the hourly wage employees.
Right. And those are designed like for specific, usually short-term injuries, aren't they? I mean,
usually short-term.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So, it's like with any insurance product. There's a purpose behind it. It was put in, it was created for specific reasons. And we look at it and I suggest it to clients, particularly in situations like this one where they said, you know, hey, one income earner,
right.
Something happens to him, we have minor kids, we need to make sure that we have income coming through. And so that's why, you know, we look at those type of policies.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And, you know, again, you're insuring your ability to earn a living.
Right.
You know, and a lot of people think of it, you know, they kind of push it off because it's like one of the last insurances that people go out and purchase. When in reality, I mean, it probably should be that first one because it's what's going to pay for all the other things should something happen.
Right.
But with the disability, like I said, it's something you have to qualify for. You got to go through underwriting. They're going to look at your health history. You could not be eligible because of a problem with a back, maybe a previous back surgery, and that
right
precludes
or I've seen them where. Depending on, maybe you've been on some kind of antidepressant or something like that. They may have an exclusion.
Correct.
In that policy for mental illness. And
right.
So those are all things that are going to come into play when they start looking at your medical history and determining what they're going to cover and what they're not.
Right, right. And some of them are going to coordinate and some of them are not. Most of your employer plans will coordinate with Social Security and with a workman's comp. Which again brings the cost down,
right.
And of course you're buying it through a group, so most of the time those are semi-guaranteed
issue.
But then if you're going out and you're purchasing it on your own, you're going to pay a little bit higher for it,
right?
Because again, and most of the time if you go out and you buy it by yourself, you can get into higher limits. Most employer-based programs will probably have a cap of about $5,000, so a highly compensated CEO. Probably isn't going to like it as much as, somebody who's,
Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That makes complete sense.
Right.
So,
yeah. And a lot of people think that, gosh, if something happens to me, I don't need it because I'll just get Social Security disability. Hey, good luck with that.
Yeah,
that's my first thing.
Yeah.
Cause you got to qualify. And a lot of people have to go through over and over being rejected before they're actually approved for it. And that can take, I've seen some where it takes a couple of months. They file the first time they get it. And I have seen other cases where it's like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah,
you can't even walk.
Yeah.
And it's taken 3 or 4 years to get through the system.
We're going
to
take a break. When we come back, we'll continue that conversation because that is one of the things. And I see it both on the side of, people needing it from a disability standpoint and being able to qualify it through the Social Security Administration can be very difficult. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Ida's Money Show. And we're back. It's Ido's Money Show, 580 KIDO, Ido's Talk Station. We still have a few minutes. We'll leave the phone lines open. That's the Team Subaru of Napa Studio Hotline. That's 580-5436 or 580-KIDO. So I have Steve Marsh here with me tonight. We've been talking about disability insurance. And just before we went on the break, we were talking about Social Security disability. And Social Security disability is one of those areas, and I am by no means even versed in this other than just, I've had a couple conversations with a couple of attorneys I know that deal with this area. But my understanding is that is kind of a barrier to get through that process.
Right.
Depending, like if you have a clear, definable disability, you probably will get approved. But there's people that even then you'll apply, get denied.
Apply,
you got to deny, and I know for a long time it was kind of the mantra was if you apply for Social Security disability, just expect you're going to get denied.
Right.
And you just need to appeal because, more than likely somewhere through the process, you'll get approved.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were saying that some of these policies, particular employer policies, will dovetail to some extent with.
Yeah,
that type of disability.
Yeah, so a lot of your employer-based program disability policies are going to coordinate. There's a coordination benefit there. So if you get, let's say you've got a $3,000 benefit, but you get the average award through Social Security disability, which is around just shy of $1,200, they're going to subtract that from the amount that the private policy is going to pay.
Oh, gotcha.
And so same thing can happen if you're getting workman's comp payments. They can reduce that award from there as well. Now, if you go out and you buy your own individual policy, rarely will those coordinate.
Yeah.
So that's above and beyond. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of makes sense.
Yeah. But, it's difficult, like Steve said, in order to qualify for Social Security disability. You could be at it, 3 or 4 months. It could be years through the appeal process.
My understanding is that, I think it's what I was talking to, her name is actually Deborah Irish, and she's an attorney here locally that deals with Social Security disability. And I want to say that what she had told us, and this has been actually a couple years ago that we talked to her, but that you appeal or you apply. If you get denied, you appeal.
Mm-hmm.
If you get denied, you appeal. If you get denied, you appeal again, and then it goes to a you would appeal to the U.S. District Court, the Federal District Court, and then you're going to it'll be heard before a district judge, and then, you know, there's a whole different process that you go mm-hmm. through. It's like a full-on trial-type related thing. Now, my understanding is those attorneys that were representing you, they actually get paid through the Social Security Administration if you are successful in your process and you ultimately get approved. Their fees will be covered by the Social Security Administration, although I think it's somehow tied into the benefit you receive.
The award that you get, yeah. And the good thing is if you think you're in that position where you need to apply for disability because you've got a disability, go in and get that process started. Because, again, if it takes 18 months for you to get through that process, they go back to when you first applied.
When you applied. That's
right. And so, you know, it may take a while, but, you know, just keep at it. That's the big thing with disability.
Yeah, because you might end up, if you get approved, you'll get a lump sum check.
You'll get a lump sum, yep.
That'll pay back to when you applied. So
and then you'll get your check every month going forward.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you just got to keep at it. Anything in the law, it's one of those things. So, Steve, thanks for being on
Absolutely.
With me tonight.
Thank you.
We've been covering for Mr. Wiley, and it's been a pleasure. We appreciate you all listening to us on the radio, and we are Idaho's Money Show, and we're out for this week. We'll see you back next week.
Idaho's Money Show is hosted by Brian Wiley, a financial advisor with Tree City Advisors. Tree City Advisors does not hold affiliations with any of the firms or professionals participating on this program. Log in to idahosmoneyshow.com for show archives, educational material, and contact information for 580 KIDO's Idaho's Money Show experts. Tree City Advisors is an Idaho registered investment advisory firm. Brian Wiley is a financial advisor with Tree City Advisors. Brian does not hold himself out as providing any financial, legal, or other advice. Information presented may not be suitable for you. Consult a registered investment advisor when evaluating any particular investment. Security or another strategy. This program is brought to you by quality sponsors like Team Subaru Mazda of Nampa, CapEd Credit Union, Amherst Madison Legacy Real Estate, Ataraxis, the law offices of Stephen Rausch, Medical Plans of Idaho, Millington Zweigert CPAs, the law offices of Howell and Vail, Deliberate Directions Business Coaching, and Tree City Advisors.